It's time for Advice Line. Call now at 800-866-8883. That's 800-866-8883. Here's your host, Roy Masters.
Oh, good evening. Welcome once again to the program. I was asked to read from a book called Adam and Eve Syndrome. A gentleman from England the other day called me and says, I should read this in my own voice, but I have to tell you, if I start to do that, I'll dry up. Because it's when I read from a book, even though my hand wrote it, I don't know how I put this stuff down because my monkey brain cannot say these things and bring ideas forth that are ancient as paradise lost, but as fresh as the snowing falling from the sky. But what I have got in my books is the mechanism of why our lives go so badly. A mechanism. I wrote a book about physics. It's about 300 pages. I'm not going to read you this book, but I want to read you what Richard, just a paragraph, so that won't hurt me. But I'm making a point with my physics. The subject matter in Gravity-Driven Universe is the energy from a unifying field. I know what a unifying field is. And physicists don't know that yet. But I'm going to put my humble theory up for grab. I'm going to write to some of them on these fancy magazines and put forth 20 pages of my ideas, see what happens. But I'm going to read just a little bit to you on chapter one. We need a better understanding of gravity, but I'm not going to talk about gravity. I just want to talk about what Richard Feynman, he's not alive right now. He said it 50 years ago, and he's pushing up daisies right now, and I will be pretty soon if I'm not careful. But he says in his lectures on physics, it's still true about gravity. Even today, all we have done is to describe how the Earth moves around the Sun, but we have not said what makes it go. Newton made no hypothesis about this. He was satisfied to find what it did without getting into the machinery of it. No one has since given any machinery. Many mechanisms for gravitations have been suggested. No machinery has ever been invented that explains gravity without also predicting some other phenomenon that does not exist. Now, I don't know what he means by the last part. I surmise what he means, but I'm talking about machinery, even of something as ethereal as gravity. It does have a machinery, and that's what my book is all about. You need to get a copy of this book. As a matter of fact, just for the hell of it, I'm going to send you what I'm going to send to a prestigious magazine on science. I'm going to send you a copy of the first 20 pages. It fits into 14 pages, 16 pages of the magazine very, very nicely. So I'm just going to give you what I'm going to send so you can read it for yourself, because it's not hard to understand the machinery. Now, I am talking about also what religious ministers of every stripe fail to deliver, the machinery behind what they're talking about. What is the machinery of love? Now, not when I say with machinery, don't get me wrong. We're not talking about a machine, but we're talking about a metaphor. What is the machinery? So what goes wrong with your machinery? Why do you feel guilty? A lady from Australia says, well, what is guilt? Why do I feel guilty? I may deal with that tonight. But I would rather talk, if you would please call me and tell me what the name of your problem or the given name of your problem is, and then tell me what the symptom is. And many problems do have a name, and I can identify what the machinery of that problem is, that I can tell you, because once you understand the machinery of the problem. Oh, the ability to see the machinery of the problem. In other words, there's something wrong with your machinery. There's also something wrong. The machinery itself is wrong. You've got a wrong system going inside you. Now, in other words, good and evil have different machineries. They're different systems. So this is what I want to say for the opening of my program. Call me about what your problem is. It's not just something wrong with your machinery. You've got the wrong machinery. You've got... Well, I'll tell you in a minute. Don't go away.
Call Roy at 800-866-8883 between the hours of 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. West Coast time.
The foundation of human understanding teaches an observation exercise, often called meditation, which permits you to become objective toward your problems and allows your heartaches, bad habits, fears, and anxieties to be completely eliminated from your life without effort on your part. Until you have begun to practice this exercise, much of what you see and hear on the following program may be shocking and upsetting to you. But if you will listen calmly and with an open mind, you may discover the key to the peace of mind and joy for which you've been searching all of your life. And now, from the foundation of human understanding, here is Roy Masters.
Yes, I opened the program a few moments ago by referring to my book and a famous scientist who's passed away, and with reference to what ails us. And he spoke about gravity in terms of no one's ever discovered the machinery of gravity. That's why nobody knows what it is. They got the, you got four fundamental forces, electromagnetism and stronger weak nuclear forces, which you probably don't know what that is. But the point is, according to theory is you've got four fundamental forces and one's missing. And it's an ethereal something missing. Nobody knows what gravity is. They know that it pulls or it pushes. And either way, the math is the same, but to me, the outcome's different, and I prove that in my book. But I'm not going to go into that. I'm going to go to the same book, the philosophical side of it, and see what Thomas Aquinas has to say. You'll see I'm starting the program very unusually tonight, but bear with me. I'm onto something. When theologian, I'm looking at the back of the book, meaning the first 110 pages of Gravity-Driven Universe, Energy from a Unifying Field, is pure physics, but easy to understand. You know, equations or mathematics, just common sense, and you can see it. And it's really physical stuff, physics stuff. And it's written in physics language, which is still easy to understand because Steve Groh helped me do this. So, and put it in place. And so my ideas are very simple, and I talk about the machinery of gravity. I am presenting the machinery. I've seen the machining, the fabric. I've seen how it works. I have the machinery, and that's why I know how to get energy from the field, so to speak. That's my theory, anyway. And please, one day, I'll prove it. But now I go to the last part of the book. It's page 111, and it goes to about, that goes 200 pages. And it's finding gravity beyond gravity. Finding, where it is. Well, see, I'm looking at the wrong book. Yes, it is. Where knowledge ceases, it's CMC where it says here. Finding God beyond gravitation, there it is, you see. Forgive me, that's the last part of the book. And I open that with a statement by Thomas Aquinas, who was a prolific writer, brilliant man, but when he was on his deathbed, his assistant pleaded with him to finish his last book. And Aquinas said, "I cannot." And urged again, he said, "All that I've written is like chalk or chaff to me." And he explained the mystical value of knowledge in his search for God. And searching for God is a science, too. searching for God in science, beyond science, beyond the Big Bang, as you might say, because there never was a Big Bang. Well, we won't go into that right now. But so he said, but then he explained the mystical value of knowledge in his search for God. Knowledge has a value, he says. He said, that which must be known cannot be loved, which is not known cannot be loved. But knowledge, therefore, is not meant to be loved for itself, but is meant to lead to that which must be loved. But when he whom is to be loved is found by virtue of knowledge, knowledge ceases. So words are the machinery of... Words are not the machinery. They're just the words about the machinery, the hidden machinery. But if you have the right kind of knowledge, words, which are not machinery, they're just words, and words can activate machineries in those who are so endowed with the wrong kind of machinery. So if you try to get me to react to make me your slave or to intimidate me into submission, then my machinery doesn't understand your words or the machinery behind your words. Am I getting somewhere? So he says again, he says, that which is not known cannot be loved. That's God, right? A spirit that made the machinery of the whole universe. And the universe has machinery to it, but gravity itself has the basic machinery, the constant, the basic constant by which all things rise, from which all things rise. He said, but now he's speaking to the spiritual that made all this, and it lies within us. Knowledge, therefore, is not to be loved for itself, but is meant to be to lead to that which must be loved. Gloved means to cleave to. You cleave to the wrong machinery, and you become the wrong machinery. You cleave to the right machinery, and your life is different. You're made, your substance is different. Your beingness is completely different. You're in the world, but not out of it. And where you are in the world, and you're of it, and your machinery is being changed from what it was when you were born to what is in conflict now. What then becomes in conflict, living in the world and living of it, is a person becoming an animal in conflict with its human. And so the lady from Australia can understand that your machinery, your nature is being altered. And the forces behind words, the forces behind words can be evil, the forces behind words can be good. One can lead you, and one can mislead you. Well, having said that, George Orwell, 1903 to 1950, he says, how do dictatorships lie to intelligent people and get away with it? In the early stages of totalitarianism, the use of Orwellian newspeak is preferred to the blatant in-your-face lies, because newspeak is the clever manipulation of words which mean one thing to the speaker and its opposite to the listener. Newspeak lies thereby to tend to confuse and escape the notice of unsuspecting people. So that's pretty simple. You know, like hope being something different, when we all think hope meant you're something better. But it turns out to be something worse. You know, and then, you know, a fundamental transformation. That meant something to him. That means fundamental transformation means to turn this country upside down to a communist slave state. But it did sound like a bright man with lots of personality. Fundamental transformation. But he didn't say what the transformation is. You assumed that it was upward. At the same time, you were so enamored in your machinery, in your misunderstanding of it, that the words that followed it on a few occasions was, and electricity will go up 10 times, and everybody applauded. And I must tell you this. Now I can tell you the story when I was a diamond cutter. It's a strange way of starting the program, but I'll get to it in just a minute. I started life as an apprentice diamond cutter at 15, I think. 14 or 15. But a long time ago. I'm not young. I'm 85. In case you hear my crackly voice, that's what I am. And eventually I came to America and I'd had some experience with hypnosis. My interest, my hobby was hypnosis. And I had plenty of experience in the military when I was in training camp. Lots of people to practice on because I was an entertainer. But that, let me put that aside. Fast forward a long way, I'm married and my wife is traveling with me. And we have David, he's only about 6 months old. And so I was in a store and I had a box of imitation jewels. One of the crown jewels of England, one of the Hope Diamond, one was the Koh-i-Noor Diamond, I think it was, I got what, 1,800 calories or something. It's a huge, big stone. So the big diamond is that badly cut. If it's an imitation of the original one, it's old-fashioned cut. It's not cut correctly, but it's in the crown jewels of England. Biggest diamond ever found. But the fascination people had when I was cutting diamonds and demonstrating it, and sometimes taking a diamond that was all cut, and all cut stones, they didn't understand the angles and to make the best reflection or refraction. And so we had to recut it. The stone ends up the same size, but you waste a bit, but it's a much more beautiful diamond, and it's worth more. So, but I would demonstrate it and bring people into the store. And so I had this case with these several different diamonds, and one of them is the Hope Diamond, which is blue. You have a different color diamonds. It's a big stone. I forget how big it was, but it's very big. It's worth, God knows how much money. There's only one of them. There are different color diamonds, by the way, but they're just not quite as beautiful as that. So, but I'm coming to it because in an emotional state, when you have people in awe of what you're doing, I would hold up the Koh-i-Noor diamond, and to this diamond is called the Koh-i-Noor diamond. I forget, maybe it got the wrong name. You know how long ago that is, I've forgotten. I haven't forgot to cut diamonds, I just may not be able to see that good. But I could still do it. It's like riding a horse or bicycle. But I would hold it up, and I had a crowd of people around me, my bench, which is, nickel-plated, and it looks nicer than what you get in a factory. I had a spinning wheel going 3,000 revolutions per minute, and I would actually cut diamonds there and explain things. But then one day, I was holding up, this is the blue diamond, this is the Hope Diamond. I even remembered who owned it at the time. And this is the Koh-i-Noor Diamond. Wow. And people got fascinated. And then I noticed how fascinated they were. So I picked up a salt shaker. And I said, this is, I forget the name, but I made something up. And I was holding up a salt shaker, and they could see a diamond, and no one said a word. Everybody looked dead serious. I put it down again. That's how easy you can mesmerize a person and make people see something or hear something that is not there. I didn't try. I just noted how easy it was to do. Now I just want to tread backwards a little bit because I mentioned I have lots of experience in hypnosis. I spent 7 years in the Institute of Hypnosis for 7 years, and after a while I was no longer practicing it. I was actually teaching people to be dehypnotized, which is what my Cure Stress device does, because just to refer back to a few moments ago to deception, fundamental change, and a diamond was a salt shaker, and nobody noticed it. And they didn't. They actually saw a diamond. They they were actually seeing something that wasn't there. All of them. I wasn't doing anything especially unusual. It was the fact that it's very easy to misdirect and confuse people and make them see, feel, and hear what ain't so. To discard what they know is right in their hearts. And that's every single bloody one of you. There are no exceptions. Until you become mature, and until you have found the truth that makes you free. And the truth that makes you free comes, can come, can descend upon you as an act of grace by God, inwardly crying and crying from out from the pain of conflict and not wanting to be the way you are but not being able to do anything about it despite all the suffering, the pain. And the realization that nothing can do it for you, and so you throw everything away and you just decide, I'd rather die. Please help me. And bang, it does happen without Roy Masters. But then there's a need for Roy Masters to save you all that trouble because the end times are coming and you're easily stupefied people. You are easily stupefied people, with some exceptions. So don't get your hockey hot. Don't get upset. Generally speaking, both sides are stupefied. And every one of you have certain flaws that are stupefiable. And so when you get married, you will find the person who understands your stupefiable nature. And I was going to read something about that from Adam and Eve's syndrome. Just read just a second. There's one paragraph. There's one paragraph right here. An ancient flaw in her nature draws a woman to a weak man. This flaw teaches her to feel secure by making him fall and fail. It also excites the weakness of a man to cling to her, which is what fuels in her the false sense of security, power. The mysterious flaw in a woman's nature rises from the spirit of original sin, and its current mystique inherently and always appeals to and supports the compatible wrong in her man. This misguided female spirit feels the power through agreeing with what's gone wrong with a man from his birth. To satisfy the need of the spirit, a man's ego must be stroked and gratified, progressively weakened, and eventually destroyed to keep her happy and fulfilled. But happiness is always short-lived because she becomes possessed by a madness she can neither understand nor control. Every woman instinctively inherits this black widow spider knowledge, tempting her man and sucking out his juices, so to speak. Sense the danger. Men, they do sense the danger, but don't know what it is. They're drawn to it. They're drawn to it to fulfill a mysterious original promise of life and glory implicit in a woman's love. To get a man, every woman knows she must put him on a pedestal. She rationalizes that selfish compulsion as her loving duty. It is not. She rationalizes that selfish compulsion as her loving duty, but it is not. And it goes on like that. That's how the book opens, and it gets into very deep stuff. And I only said that by opening the book, that every man is stupefied by the appearance of a woman. And women know it, and advertisers know it. You don't use too many men to titillate people to buy something. It's the female that does it. And why do they use a female? Because she's seductive. She understands the stupid men, or the stupefied men, or the man needs more stupefaction, like a drug addict needs a pusher. So you all have it, because you've all had girlfriends, and you've fallen out and never did work. You've all had marriages and, well, Then you wake up one morning in discovering that you're losing war you didn't know you're fighting. You're falling in love, but you're falling from what love is all about. That's my point. When you fall in love, and the primal cause of the falling is the female. It operates through the female, even though it isn't the female. Just like your president. Well, he's not really, he's not my president in my head. He's a communist. But also, there's a spirit that works through him just the way it works. He's a female, part devil, part man, part woman, part devil. But behind him, he seduces you. And I described how he did that, how he does that. And then he confuses you about what you see. And there's a technique, but I don't want to talk about the technique just now. I just want to slowly introduce you to a point that I really wanted to make when I first started the program. Now, yesterday, now I'm going to just change the subject just a little bit. Yesterday I did a seminar, a talk, at in Grants Pass, at my son Alan's big fancy mansion he bought for his business. And we didn't have the TriCaster, which means the three cameras, and so we have the three cameras, and the production is done in the cameras while we're doing it, and so we don't have to edit it afterwards. So the camera was focused on me. It was the best talk I've ever given, except at the very end. Well, I won't say except. Let me just rephrase it. Until a woman started to scream or wanted to vent something. She had a sort of like a catharsis happening while I was talking. So I got her to sit next to me on the chair, then you'll see something very scary. So towards the end of the program, you'll see two of us on the stage. And I would say not let the children watch. But the subject matter that caused the problem, that caused her to see it was... Is this. I started the lecture by talking about my grandson, Luke. And he always calls Grandpa and consults with me whenever he has little problems. And he said, Grandpa, you know, I've written a script. It's about several hundred pages. And whenever I try to put it into practice. He knows how to use computers. He's 17. He's 17 years old. He's very good at what he does. He knows how to do you know, 3D stuff and all the rest of it. He's very good at what he does, and he's also, you know, he knows how to write too very well. But when he comes to doing it, he cannot do it. Something stops him. So this is what I want to talk to you about tonight, about a piece of machinery. And how easy it is to deal with this piece of machinery. Now, I know I've got a cricket in my room somewhere. I've got the window open, so forgive me if you hear the crickets. See if you can focus on me and not the cricket. But a part of you will probably focus on the cricket. Can you hear it? I can. See if you can focus on me and see how hard it is to make your eyes, hold your attention to it. Now, the cricket stopped cricketing, so you'll be okay. Okay, now, so I gave him a story. I said, one day I was went to my work on my bicycle, like as I usually do, when I closed the door and made sure it was tight. And when I went downstairs and got on the bicycle, something says, you didn't lock the door. I said, I know I did, to myself. I went back upstairs and it was locked all right. You pulled, you pushed and everything. It was, but 5 miles towards my destination, which is 10 miles, as an apprentice diamond cutter, there it was again. The machinery of my mind was talking to me, but it wasn't the machinery of my mind. It was using the machinery of my mind, because the mind does have a machinery to it, doesn't it? It's using the machinery to talk to me. And there was no other me besides me. How can there be another me? I remember asking myself a question, you know, and my own voice came back and gave me the answer. This is ridiculous. Me answering me? And I knew it was a stupid answer. But I had those little problems, but let me just tell you after the break, when I come back, what I talked to my son about, grandson about, and how I dealt with something that you need to know. Let me see. Those of you who are listening to this segment are a very special elite group of people who listen to certain radio stations, which I buy. But that's going to change because slowly but surely I'm working out different arrangements rather than paying. But still, it costs me a lot of money to do it because I have a network and I have 200 stations. I'm going to be having another 100 soon. So it does cost money in a different way. I don't pay directly. I pay to the network. So that's how it works out. So, but right now you're still getting me because I'm paying directly to the stations. And this is a special group. And so you've been listening to me the longest. I want you to know that we're having a seminar 4th of July. I give you the first shot to be able to come. It's not cheap, but it's not expensive. You pay $200 a night for a good hotel. We have 200 acres and a beautiful ranch and retreat. And we have an air-conditioned lecture room and with 50 theater-style seating. Really good, good food. And it's just a magnificent piece of property. It's the nicest in the whole area. And so it's 4th of July seminar. You can come for a day if you want to, but already most people are coming for 3 days. Just a few people coming for 1 day or 2 days, which kind of crimps the fact that people who want to come for 3 days are not going to be able to. They're able to come for two. I think 3 days is really better. 1 day is better than nothing. Depending on how far you have to fly or walk or drive, but we're not going to videotape this, so don't worry. And that's it. It's too much to videotape, 6 hours a day. Too much. I can do 6 hours a day as long as I'm talking to people. As long as people are alive, I can talk at the problem and help them with their machinery. And there is a mechanism, a means, by which you can be transported from one subjectivity to another. And that machinery, that knowledge, is not known. Now, words should deliver you to that machinery. It should show me where the machinery is, how to find the right machinery, how to have the right attitude or altitude. For instance, a preacher will say, God loves you, but he doesn't put a word in there that's needed. God loves you, and that means as you are. That's what it means. You might as well put the word in, but that's the wrong thing. It means you can't get better if you think God loves you as you are. You should put a different word in there. God loves you from what you are. Now you are looking for a different piece of machinery. Call my office, 800-877-3227. I beg your pardon. I was about to give you the number of the radio program. Okay, be right back.
Listening to Advice Line with Roy Masters. Call Roy at 1-800-866-8883.
So the reason why you can be deceived because you have the wrong machinery, you have the wrong equipment, you're shaped in a wrong way. Who hath fear is not made perfect in love. Simple. You're in the world, but not of it. So what does it mean to be of it? You have its machinery. It's a metamorphosis. You will become slowly changed by the things that affect you. And here I will talk to you about, I'll come to talk to you about how things affect you. And I'm in the middle of talking to you about my grandson who called me about his machinery. Because when he came to me and said, Dad, Grandpa, I got this wonderful idea intuitively, but when I get into the into it, suddenly I find I can't do it. Something stops me. So I was telling that story before I went off the air with a commercial. There's something that told me I didn't lock the door when I knew I did. So the way I cured the problem is, actually, you hold your ears, because this is what I said to myself. I don't know who you are inside me, but screw you, I did lock the door. I've been okay ever since. That's a spirit of doubt. And if you listen to it, you will perish. If you struggle with it, you will perish. If you worry about it, it will perish. All you have to do is recognize it, and the light will drive it away. The ability to see it and to confidently to speak to it that way in the mind, even if you put words to it, like I did. Screw you. I know I closed that door, I locked it. And it came to me back, you know, a time or two in my life, in different ways, which I cannot extrapolate on it right now. But I said to Luke, I said, now, Luke, all you have to do is say the same thing. When you look at it, when you see something, there's something that's stopping you, and sometimes it will talk to you like that. But there's something called, let me see, just if I've got to play with words, so you forgive me. Let me give another example which magnifies it just a little bit. I once said to a man, I've always used this example, if you've heard it before, you're a new listener, it's okay if you've heard it before. If you're a new listener, you need it. If you've heard it before, you may understand it better. I once said to a man, you shouldn't smoke, you know. You don't look so good. And I knew the man fairly well, but you really shouldn't. He said, look, I can stop smoking if I want to. I said, but you can't want to. And there is it right there. See, you're stuck in a machinery that won't let you do things. And so is the person who implanted that machinery in you and put the doubt in you, almost from the day you were born. So how do you deal with that machinery? How does it stay alive? How does it grow in you? I haven't seen one person pick up the phone and say, I identify with that. What is this that causes you to doubt? This thing that talks to you, or it has a dark, velvety feeling that invites you in to make you secure? What is that? How does it work? When I told my grandson, so I said, look, all you have to do is to know it has no power, except you struggle with it, worry about it, be upset with it. All you need to do is say, screw you, I know who you are. And he laughed his head off, and he walked away better. That's how simple it was. This machinery can be destroyed. The machinery of negativeness, the feeling of not being able to do something you know you should. So now, where does the feeling come from? What is the strong feeling that even though you know you shouldn't drink, you shouldn't smoke, you shouldn't run around with the wrong people, what is this part of you that makes you want to do something or not want to do something? Or that it will get to the point where you just can't go out to work. You know you should, but you don't. The feeling prevents you. A feeling that says you that won't let you go to work. And you struggle with it, and you give energy to it, and it will get worse. And then eventually, you know, when it gets as really bad, you're stuck in your house forever. And you know, that's in the extreme, of course. But everybody's got a part of them that's reluctant to do what's right and cannot stop doing what's wrong. And somebody, you can keep struggling with it and justify it like the man, I can stop if I want to. That's not true. You cannot stop smoking if you want to. It won't let you. Don't like this stuff? It, in you, the doubt thing. It has control of your machinery. And it's nurturing that machinery each time you yield to it. And every time you struggle with it, say with upset, because you have to have energy to fight it, you can't, see, you don't, you're not there at the point where you can look at something and make it go away. Or you can look at an enemy, adversary, and make him feel uncomfortable and feel an energy come from you and he walk or moves away from you. You could save yourself a lot of trouble that way. As I've grown older, I've learned to have developed that force within me. Who is within me? Who can be against me? Who is in me and in you, hopefully, then who can be against you? So what you need is the who I'm talking about. That's what Aquinas says, you know, when you must use knowledge to seek to that for that which must be loved. And when that which is loved is found, knowledge ceases. You don't need knowledge anymore. You don't have to figure things out anymore. You just have an intuitive ability to look at something and cause it to happen or not happen, or to look at the problem and it goes away, or the illness goes away by observation. And so, and whereby nothing, you do nothing of yourself, it just happens on its own. When you haven't see a need to do something, when you have an intuitive self, you just don't know you can't do something. You go, suddenly you find you can put the cigarette down and you don't need it anymore. You're not compatible with it anymore. You're coming from a different place. You're growing from a different place. You're growing, evolving. How can I say it? What words can I use? You are devolving. When you are reacting, an animal reacts to pressure. It compels it to move, run, or fight. When human beings have lost grace, have fallen from grace by temptation, then you are obedient to a different spirit. You're obedient. You cannot, the Bible says you cannot ride two horses. Some people can just for a while. But you know what I mean. You cannot bend two bows. See? You cannot serve God and man. You can't do it. You can't respond to pressure like an animal and expect to be a human. You can put a face on the human, on the inhuman, but deep down inside you're dying. So the face you put on, people will accept. And when people accept that face, you dance to it because you like to be accepted and you work to be accepted. And so that's, so then you become a slave of your, of behavior. But it's only a surface. The behavior is only a surface. And so the inside is rotting. And the new self is beginning, the other self is taking shape and form inside you. That's why movie stars have so many problems with drugs and because of their performance. They're paid to entertain, to make people forget their problems. And you know that the whole America is involved, immersed in marijuana and entertainment and excitement, all designed to distract you from your problem as if it was the cure. Even drugs, as well as alcohol, just, you know, just legal drugs and illegal drugs, all have the same purpose, to relieve the pain of re-existing, demoralized, you see, because when you react, you are demoralized. And now there's something that says inside you, said something is pumped inside, says, you can't help but react. We all react. Yes, you all do. Most of you do, and that's your problem. See? Your reaction is, makes you, to find words for it, your reactions enslaves you to the source. It's called obedience. When you react, it conditions you. But it not only conditions you as a human, animals don't have a soul. So therefore, they don't have conflict. They run or fight, and there's no conflict. If they don't, they're dead. It running and fighting to stress, which is necessary to function, otherwise they'd be the lethargic. It's life and death. You must have stimulation. Hunger, the stimulation to be hungry, to look for the food, stimulation to run, to fight. If you didn't have all those dangers, the animal wouldn't function. It would nothing to do. It wouldn't exist. Each animal has its own stimulus and giving it a certain form. So human beings are in the world and not of it. But if you don't understand what religion is trying to tell you or misleading you, like I was saying before, God loves you? Yes, there's something missing. Does he love you as you are? Or does he love you from what you are? If he loves you from what you are, suddenly you're a new person. And then when you are a new person, the machinery that says, that doesn't let you do what you want to do. In other words, you want to stop drinking, but you can't. There's something that looks right and you know it's wrong, but you can't help but be drawn to it like a moth to a flame. But when it comes to stopping smoking, something as simple as that, you cannot. Because once you give into it, once you surrender to the part of you that makes you want it, even though you see it's unreasonable, it will slowly but surely suck your life and take your life force and shape itself in you. Shape itself, put its machinery, earthy machinery, so that you get old and winsed and with a meaningless life, and we all die from the disease called stress, and stress is temptation. Another word for stress is temptation. Seduction. That's why your country is falling apart, because all of you have been seduced. And look at the nature of your country, look what's happening to it. Vile and violent and perverse, people looking for pleasure, murder, mayhem, and a stupefied people electing stupefied puppet masters called presidents. In this case, at least, it's true. Stupid people, you get the kind of government you deserve. Stupid people elect people like what you got now. But they're very clever, those people, because you've got Biden. So if you dismiss the first guy, I'm talking about how clever this is set up, you've got three shots at each. You've got Biden, he's more dangerous. And if he falls, you've got the Speaker of the House, Nancy, she's nuts. So you're done. So you better understand how you got into this mess, and that's what we're talking about right now. Right now, I'm ready to take calls. And ladies and gentlemen, juveniles and crocodiles will be ready for you if you would like to call my office, 800-877-3227, and get a copy of Cure Stress, or get a copy of the military version. We have quite a few of those, but I have decided that the people in this town don't want these. I've started a Cure Stress store. I watch how people, it's all dressed up with nice stuff, books in the window, Cure Stress, and people walk, they just look in there, oh, stress, and walked on. It's as if they didn't have any stress. It's true that they do live like they don't have any stress. They do have it, but they're all high on something. Even if it's anger and rage, it keeps the conscience at bay. See? So I'm going to give it one more shot, and then I'll go back to the military. I just thought it'd be nice if I could get... We decorated the store and made it look inviting. We're not finished yet. But the fact is that stress kills you. But what stress is in the human realm is temptation. Temptation. To get you to react anyway by seductive or violent means. And none of you have escaped that. The brightest among you, scientists, maybe they're not the brightest among you, but please bear with me. The preachers, they don't understand the machinery. The reason why I don't have that many people, as many as churches usually have, huge congregations, like thousands. It's because he's not threatening. He's a personality. He says nice things. He's an Obama, but he's a preacher. But he's not going to give you the machinery. He's going to tell you stories. He's basically a sociopathic people pleaser, and you love it. You've got a human God, that's what you have, and you love to hear good things, and you applause when he says something. You've got to stand up for yourself, but you haven't got the machinery to stand up for yourself, do you? And that's what's wrong with you. You don't have that machinery. Well, go call my office and get the machinery to bring you back to salvation.
To Advice Line with Roy Masters. Call Roy at 1-800-866-8883.
Well, we haven't had much calls on my subject matter, which is the feeling, that impulse that won't let you do something. So you're too tired to do it, and you want to stop smoking, or you want to do something good. But you can also do something good by impulse. You do the right thing for the wrong reason at the wrong time. The impulses are pseudo-positive and always negative, both. So what I'm trying to tell you is I need to talk to you about this, but I'm trying to find different ways of talking to you about feelings. The feeling is that it's an ominous feeling that won't let you quit smoking, for example. And it says to you, but you can quit if you want to, but when you really try to quit, you cannot. Same with everything, sex, everything. And so other people can control this mechanism, make you a slave, and make you want to serve them. And so I'll take some calls here right now, see if we can get the program going. But there's a lot I can say if you'd only talk to me about it. So I'm sitting here with trying to say it in every way I can. But if somebody would call me on the subject, why can't you, let's say you can't stop smoking, and you tried, and you know you're going to die from cancer, and maybe you're dying from cancer, but you know it, and you're going to die, but you're still going to smoke. How do you stop smoking? You take a pill, but the pill is not going to cure. It may cure the impulse for one thing, but that impulse must come out in some other way. All you're doing is suppressing it and smoking up the symptoms. And what all we do is address the symptoms. And for 53 years, doctors and psychiatrists have been calling cure stress meditation, exercise, the missing half of medicine, because it assuages the root of the cause of the symptoms under treatment. And that's what I ask you to consider, that when you put my number down, call me at 800-877-3227, business hours, West Coast time. And you're wider about it, you might inquire about the seminar coming up at the 4th of July. Okay, let me take my call now from New York. Hello, it's Tom in New York. How do you do, Tom?
Pretty good. How are you today, Roy?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to express myself in delicate issues, but I can't get someone to sort of like track with me so I can say more.
You're an amazing guy. Love your work. Love listening to you.
Thank you.
That's when I'm awake at night. Roy, I have a suggestion or whatever I would like to ask of you. I had actually sent you an email on this as well, but I used to know a gentleman from work, just an acquaintance, and anyway. Something like around 5 to 8 years ago, he lost the use of his legs.
Yes.
And both of his legs. And recently, I don't know why, I've never thought of this guy, and, you know, I was seeing in a couple of years. And it just came to me that, you know what, this guy could probably walk, and he probably just has a block.
Of course.
That's maybe possible. Stopping
it's possible.
Him,
it depends
and it might not be a physical thing. It might just be a mental
yes.
thing. And
yes.
I... I don't know, this just only happened within the past week, and I wanted to know, before I even bother contacting this guy, how can I find out,
I tell you what. Follow your intuition. It'd be a lesson for you. If you can find him, just say, I remember you, and I just learned something recently. I just want to give you a gift. And you hand him either one of the CDs, Coping Strategies, which is the same thing as the Cure Stress device, except it's Cure Stress is more novel and convenient. Hand him.
Right. Hand him. Should I give him your book, Coping with Strategies?
No. Not yet. No. Just give him a CD. Or no, but give him. Can you afford, to give this man a little something of yourself? It's not expensive. If you follow your intuition and give him the Cure Stress device, which is so novel because it says Cure Stress on it, and it could touch him. Say, look, it's nice knowing you. I've learned something. I thought this would be helpful. Then say goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then what about hypnosis? Is that something of
no,
an
no.
option?
You oh. don't. Hypnosis is what's wrong with you. Everybody on Earth, to varying degrees, are in a hypnotic trance-like state. Some to greater degrees on the other. The Al-Qaeda people who you think they're doing God a favor when they blow themselves up are completely mesmerized, somnambulistic, you can't cure them.
Well, I guess I'm trying to see. What's been on my mind is how can a person know when they're having physical ailments, if it's not an actual a physical disability? But
let me say, as long as you're born whole, and mm-hmm. something's going wrong with you, the chances are 99.9% you're living the wrong life.
Right.
And things are taking shape with you, and things are going wrong, and your treatment is only making it worse. It's allowing you to live longer, wronger. Living longer, wronger, it allows you to live longer, wronger, and things get worse. You feel better. You're grateful to the doctor and the dope pusher, but you're getting worse by taking medicine for it without understanding what you're doing. You might want to do it, take medicine and deal with the problem at the same time. That's understandable. Deal with the symptoms, but as well as the cause. You've got to get to the root cause. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that wasn't a heavy call, and I'm almost the end of this first hour all on my own, and the number to call on my program is 800-866-8883. Please help me discuss with you. Talk to me about this part of you that knows you should do something. Stop smoking. Let's take the smoking or the drinking. But something won't let you. And you want to do something good. You got a good idea, but then all of a sudden you start to doubt yourself. What is this machinery? I got more to say, but I need someone to talk to about it. To quantify it, to make it personal. So I want to adapt my conversation to the actual problem itself rather than sort of spew it out in the air and saying this is how it works. I need to talk to a person. And anyway, call me 800-866-8883. That's the radio program Monday through Friday. I might as well give it to you, so I'm going to do another hour in a minute. And call my office, 800-877-3227. You got that? 800-877-3227. And the post office box, I forgot that. Post office box is 1000 Grants Pass, Oregon 97528. If you're a new listener, ask for Cure Stress Device. Or go to the website, fhu.com, Foundation of Human Understanding. We'll be right back. Try to